is the second wonderful idea I've heard today. Like you, I have some special tools. Most of them have belonged to my dad. And same thing. Long years ago, he would give me something that he had worked with for years. Maybe he'd worn it out and was going to replace it. I don't know. But the fact is, I've got a few tools that my dad had used. And I'm going to do that very same thing to my dad's tools. Thank you very much for that. That means a lot to me. Everybody have a good night. It's been a wonderful time here on the net. It's been a good net. I'm sure everybody would agree. KK4JBQ, back to you, Jeff.
Appreciate you dropping in for the rag chew tonight. And for those of you who... Let me stop right here and take any additional check-ins before we go on to Mr. Walt. Any additional stations would like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, please call KO4NUE or Net Control. So, let me do this before we get to Walt, the next person on the stump. So I totally messed the preamble up, but I'm going to try to get a little bit of redemption. So, any station not wishing to hang around for the rag chew may secure it this time, even though we're a little late. But I don't want to get in trouble with the net manager, so we're going to go ahead and say that. So those of you who want to secure, this is KO4NUE, and it has been a pleasure being your net controller tonight. All right, so we're going to drop back in with next on the stump is Mr. Walt. And Walt, I'm ready for you tonight, bud. Come on.
KO4NUE, K4OIM. Dad, I made it up there to the ham yard sale today, and I was wanting to go to the bank, and my daughter had went and dropped my grandson off at school, and she came back as I was coming out the door. She said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to go try to find where AK lived over in Easley." "Daddy, you ain't able to drive that far. You get in my truck." And we left the house here. It's about 8:15, and we went down Highway 11 to 14 and hit 414 over to 25 and then down to 253 and out to 124. And I thought it was going to be a long way. And I didn't have any money. I had money in the bank, but I didn't have any money. And when we got to Traveler's Rest, I said, "Huh, I ain't got no money. Look for a BB&T. And we didn't see a bank nowhere. Thank goodness. But I said, "Pull in this QT up here." I went in there and got some money out. They had a $200 limit on it. And she said, "Daddy, you going to buy another radio?" I said, "I don't need another radio. No, I'm just going over there to try to help Miss Teresa out. I might see a microphone or a key I like." And "You ain't buying a radio." I said, "Nope, I got enough radios." And we got over there, and she sat in the truck. She said, "I ain't interested in radios, Daddy. I'll just take your time." And I went down there, down the hill, and I bought one thing to work on and two things to work with. I've always needed a Variac transformer for these old tube-type boat anchors, and it's a very reasonable price on it. I got it, and I've been wanting an old D-104 amplified mic. I bought it at a good price, and then AK, he worked on equipment. And he had a little metal cabinet back there with 40-watt resistors in it. And I got it for a good price. And he had an old, it's a DX-302 Radio Shack shortwave receiver. And Gary was honest. He said, "Well, I'm going to tell you, he worked on all kind of stuff, and I don't know if any of this stuff works." Well, he plugged the receiver up, and it came on, and he turned the volume control up, and it was real scratchy. I said, "Well, it's dirty." And I got it at a good price. I got it home, plugged it up. It don't work. All it does is squeal, but a good cleaning might straighten that out. But anybody that's out there listening, that's very, very reasonable prices on that equipment. And believe me, I'm going to get this old Yaesu FT221R base station back on the air and wire this D104 up for it. And I'll know every time I key this mic up, I'll tell everybody. I'll call the net on that 221R, and I'll let everybody know I'm calling it off one of AK's microphones I got over there, Chad. And you've done a pretty good job there at the net. Totally surprised me.
Well, I tell you, Walt, when Gary offered a couple of, well, last month or so for me to jump in on the Wednesday night net, I got a little routine that I do in here about 45 minutes before the net. I get all my computer screens straightened out, and I get my preamble in front of me and draw my little lines on my notebook paper. And I know, you know, exactly by the holes stamped in the notebook, if it's college rule, I know exactly, you know, if my call sign ends on this letter, it's 15. If it ends on this hole, it's 30. And Gary made the comment that, you know, just get you a pencil and draw you some lines on a piece of paper. And I cannot use a pencil. I got to use a pen, a number 10 pen, because it glides real good. It's real fast. I got everything neat and organized, and I mean, it's almost OCD-ish. But Anna, when she comes in here to call the net, I mean, it's just, she just gets a little stool, sits up here. Nothing is in order. It's just, okay, give me a pad, give me a pen. And it's just like, I just sit back and go, how in the world can you do that in your mind? Because everything here is just so laid out and organized. So when she calls the net, I just get about 3 feet behind her, because it's just whatever goes. And she just absolutely amazes me. But she does a whole lot better job than I do. And I just real blessed to have her, I guess. But Walt, I want to tell you another thing too, is that you were telling me about some of the radios, and I know you've got a bunch of quote unquote boat anchors over there. But I think it's funny that the more experienced hams from, I guess, your generation deal with vacuum tubes and things like that, and I have no idea how that stuff works, and I mean none. So I hear the older hams complain about the newer radios with all the menus and the menu diving and all of the software and stuff like that. So I hear them complain about the new radios, and then people like me are baffled and confused about, you know, the vacuum tube stuff, and have no idea how you work on that stuff. But, you know, you made a comment the other night that, you know, if something goes wrong with this digital menu-driven radio I've got here, I guess I'm kind of stuck, because, I mean, I can't repair things that intricate. But, you know, vacuum tubes and transistors and things like that, capacitors and all that, that's, you know, on a bigger scale. Those are a little bit easier to repair, I suspect. But anyway, Walt, I'm glad you had a good day, and glad you got some things over at AK's house. And just glad you had a good day. So go ahead and take it, Walt.
10-4 MRY,
10-4 RM,
go ahead.
Old man on the mountain, as Gary says, have his word there. This Miss Anna?
Oh, that was somebody else jumped in. Let me go ahead and give a call. I'm not sure exactly what's going on, but last station in there, this is a Blue Ridge 2-meter net. If you'd like to check in, give me a call one more time. We'll get you checked in. Where that was, but go ahead, we racked you. I'm listening.
Yeah, the only other thing I was going to say is as you get into HF radio and listen to these guys running the old tube type, the old Collins, the Drake, the Hollycrafters, the old tube type transmitter had just got a deeper, solid tone to it. That's like most guitar players. They do not, you couldn't give them a solid state amp. They will only use two type amps. And it's just a whole different sound. And like you said, I've got this FT950 sitting here, and it's menu driven. I know how to turn it on and go to the band and that I want it on and hit the auto-tuner on it. And that's about as far as it goes. I know it's got a menu there where I can record whoever I'm listening to and play it back. It's got an equalizer in there for the sound. It's got an equalizer for the microphone. And it's got preamps and attenuation and all that stuff. And I just sat and took the time to go in there and know how to do that and to split frequencies, to talk on one and receive on another. And I've got that figured out. But I just love the old tube types where you have to load and tune and go with it. And I love the old tube type radios. I just got to get me a tube type transmitter now. And I'm not knocking that Rock Hill ham fist, but I've been up there twice. And I told Gary up there today, he had more stuff over there at AK's house for sale than I've seen at the Rock Hill each time I went. And that's a pretty good drive up to Rock Hill, but to each his own, I guess. And I don't know if you got anybody else up on the start, but I'll stick around and cue the bat with you and Gary as you close the net out. I done took my sleepy pill, but I'll try to hang in here, Chad. KO4NUE, K4OIM.
Stand by just 1 second. N4MRY, Miss Mary, are you still in there? I think that may have been your call coming over the net. N4MRY, are you in there, Miss Mary?
4DOS. Then K4RM and he and Mary were on their way up to the cabin, and so they might have been maybe up there in one of them RF holes on the mountain.
Did they want me to check them in, Gary?
Yeah.
So I'll keep my count where it is then. All right, Walt, I'm sorry. Go ahead, bud. I'm still listening. Let me tell you, so the last ham fest me and my wife went to, I forget where it was somewhere in North Carolina a couple months ago, Waynesville. I picked up a Hammerland receiver. It's I think it's a HQ 110 or 130, something like that. It's got the clock on the left hand side, and then got the ammeter on the right hand side. And the guy said he was tired of hauling it around, and I brought it back to the bed and breakfast we were staying at in Waynesville and plugged it in. And I mean, everything works. The lights work and things like that. I actually haven't plugged it up to an antenna yet. But I gave him $30 for it. He said he was not going to take it home. He was tired of moving it around. So I'm assuming there's something wrong with it. But maybe one of these days I'll get it cleaned up and hook it up to an antenna and see kind of what I can do with it, I guess, which is probably not much, but hey, I'm always willing to try. You know, I might end up catching it on fire, who knows, but I guess it's the effort that counts.
WEK4OIM. Chad? all I can say is, buddy, you messed up when you plugged it up. These old boat anchors, the capacitors leak down on them, the tubes get gassy, and you need one of these Variac transformers like I bought over there at AK's today. You plug the transformer up, and then you plug the radio up, and you turn the Variac on, and you don't put no more than 15 or 20 volts to the radio. You turn it on, all the lights will come on, because they usually, one of those probably got 6-volt filaments in it, maybe 12, in the lights and the tubes. But if you shoot 110 volts to it, it wipes them tubes and capacitors out in it. You have to always leave them on a Variac and bring them up real slow. Leave them on 24 hours a day for at least 2 days before I put 110 volts to it. That way, it bring it up slow. It burns the gases out of the tubes and all. And that thing's got paper capacitors in it. You automatically replace all of them anyway, because I guarantee you, every one of them are leaky or shorted. And I got that SX Holocraft or SX-99 receiver back there. It didn't have but two paper capacitors in it, or wax capacitors, whatever you want to call them. But it had those big old bumblebee capacitors. And you have to replace, they are just as bad as the old paper capacitors were about shorting and leaking. See, they are supposed to block AC current. But if they get the leaking, the AC leaks across the foil and that paper and comes out on the other end and makes that capacitor act just like a resistor. And you can check it, the capacitor for shorts, and it won't show. It's leaking. It'll be leaking AC from one side across to the other side. But if you plug it straight into the wall, I guarantee you, you're going to have to replace every capacitor in that thing, Chad. I hate to tell you that, but and you might have modified some of the tubes in it. I've done the same thing. That's why I was so glad to get that Variac over there at AK's today. K04NUE, K4OIM. I'll turn it back to you and let you finish the day. I don't know if you got anybody else up for right you, but Gary said he's going to stick around after you close the net out. And
so I'll stick around after you close the net, Chance, for a minute or two. KO4NUE, K4OIM. Back to you, Chance.
So I'll start working toward closing things out, but I'm just gonna let you know I'm getting some dirty looks over here because Anna came in here. She's got her own little pen holder over there where she does keeps her stuff, and she has noticed that all of her pens are the .5, which don't write very well, and all of my pens are the .10, which write really well. And she's also telling me, I told you so, not to plug the radio up, like she, you know, knows absolutely nothing about a radio, but she's not passing up the opportunity to give me a hard time. But that's okay. I can take it. All right. Are there any more stations wishing to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net? This is KO4NUE and call net control. Have I missed anyone for comments or ragged you? Please call KO4NUE or Net Control. Please stand by for my net report. I forgot to count myself. Dave, can you amend the net report to 51? Sorry. All right, I will now return the repeater back to normal amateur use. 7-3s to all on the net, and it's been a pleasure to be your net controller tonight. This is KO4NUE, and I'm clear.
KO4NUE. Go ahead and send in another net report. Dave, I asked him the same question about a month ago, and he said, go ahead and file another net report with the correct count. And when he goes back and checks it, he checks for the update, Chad.
All right. Please stand by for my second net report. All right. Well, that was quite an experience. Seems like it was a little bit easier last time I did it, but who all's in there going to talk to me tonight?
Wes here.
Q here.
Go ahead and pick it up, bud. Say Miss Teresa was in decent spirits today.
Okay, well, she's got a lot on her, not only with AK, but her son had to have surgery today. he was over there this morning and up until about, 12:30 or so, and then might have been a little bit earlier than that. But he had to go get his wife, and they had to go to the hospital at 1:30, and he had surgery at 3:30. But he's already back at home, and he's made it through surgery and all that, and he's doing real well. But she looked at me and Joy and said, you know, I don't know if I can stand one more thing or not. It just seems like it was all piled up on her, but she's doing real well. I meant to tell Walt earlier. Walt, I did go out and look, and I've got that thing that you were looking for. I got one out there in the barn, and we'll get together on it here in a few days. I don't guess you sold that other D-104 stand there that didn't have the head on it and the bottom plate, did you?
No, it's still there.
Look for it. Hope a couple dollars. Back for me, because I meant to go ahead and get it to have it for parts for this one that I bought, or either go ahead and fix it. Another company bought the patent for that thing, but under one condition, they cannot produce the microphone and sell it. They can do the circuit board and the head. You can buy that much of it. You can't buy the base and the stand and the bar on it. So, I'll get it when I get the antenna, Gary. Internet control?
I don't know where to start other than, I kind of messed that all up tonight. I am just struggling. I don't know what's going on. I guess I've been cooped up in this house too long. But I just could not get things straight tonight. And I feel like I was more stressed this time than when I did it the first time with Gary. I don't know what my deal is. I guess I'm just tired, I guess. But it was really nice to get down in the shop today. I started off yesterday working on a little circuit that I've been trying to build and couldn't find my capacitors. I think that was day before yesterday. So I ordered another box from Amazon. So they came in this afternoon, and I started back on it trying to get it figured out, and it's just not going well. This is the third time I've tried to build this little circuit, and I keep getting my solder trails mixed up somehow, and I keep blowing the timers out of it. So, you know, that's my motto around here. If I can't get it right the first time, I'll get it right the third time or the fifth time. So, you know, things like that I really struggle with. But when I get, you know, a tool in my hand, that's a wrench or something like that, I'm pretty good at it. Machine tools, things like that, it, you know, you have to really pay attention to what you're doing, and I don't keep a radio in the shop, I don't keep a TV in the shop or anything like that, because it gets me distracted, and when you're dealing with, you know, thousandths of an inch or something like that, especially if some of this material's pretty expensive, you know, you get a piece of bronze or last year I had a customer wanting me to do some work with titanium, and that stuff is just, I mean, it is expensive, and you make a mistake with it, and, you know, I mean, I'll have to eat it. But this guy, Gary, showed up here last year wanting me to machine a shaft or something for him. And he showed up with a 4-foot piece of titanium round stock. It was 3 inches in diameter and 4 feet long. And I reached in to grab that, to get it out of the back of the truck and put it in the shop. And I literally picked it up like a baseball bat. That stuff was this, and I'm not kidding. It's that light. You just pick it up, swing it around one-handed like nothing. But, man, you want to talk about eat a saw blade up or tear tooling up. I pre-planned the material out, and I had, you know, a couple of inches on either end I could play with. So, not working with that stuff ever before, I chucked it up in the lathe and was trying to figure out what feed and speed I needed to run at. But I must have went through probably $20-$30 worth of carbide inserts just to figure out how to run the stuff. And then when the shavings come off and accumulate in the bottom of the chip tray, they want to catch on fire. I mean, it's the craziest stuff. I've never seen anything like it. And he wanted a piece welded on the end of it. So I had to change the cup out on the TIG machine and put a diffuser in it to get argon all the way around it. I mean, it welds like a dream, but machining is just, oh, it's horrible. But I guess what I'm trying to say is soldering and electrical stuff, as far as circuit goes, boy, it's It's tough, but I'm trying to learn. I'm sticking with it, and, you know, resistors and small capacitors are pretty cheap, so I can blow up as many of those as I want, I guess. But when I start tearing machine tooling up, I guess I'll have to quit.
Jump in there. He ain't said nothing yet. I was over there, you know, visiting with Chris, and he showed me a couple of things that he had broken, and he said this bit right here is $60, and I said, oh Lord. He said, I got some that's more expensive than that. And I said, I believe I'd be careful. He said that he put the decimal point in the wrong place on in the computer or something, and it tried to do too much too quick, and it broke that bit real quick. But I told him, and I'll tell you, you fellas that run those lathes, I can run a wood lathe, but I don't think I would want to. I wouldn't mind trying to run a metal lathe, but there again, I've never done that. And I'd probably mess up a whole lot more than you did, Chad.
Last year, so let me tell you. Let me just tell you. So 4 years ago, I bought a Seat and Guide machine, Winona Van Norman Seat and Guide machine, off of eBay, and had to drive down to Alabama to pick it up. It's right at, I think, the Alabama, Florida line, something like that. And this guy that I bought it from, he builds helicopter engines. That's all he does. And he builds the engine, you know, I know you've seen MASH, those helicopters that come in on MASH. He builds the engines that goes in that helicopter. And so I drove down there and picked the machine up, and I asked him why he was selling it. And he said, well, he says, I just cannot hold a tight tolerance with this machine. I had to get this machine over here to hold the tolerances on the valve seats and the valve guides. And I says, well, you know, what kind of tolerances are you trying to hold? Because the machine was in really good shape. And he said, well, that's automotive. The one you're buying is for automotive heads, and I just thought I could get away with it. He says, but I can't, because the FCC randomly checks behind me for, you know, quality assurance, or they'll send somebody down here to inspect and this, that, and the other. And he said, if you're doing automotive heads or something, it's a great machine. But so the tolerances that I hold down here are down to the 1/1007 inch. There's some occasions where I have to get down to, a 0.5 thousandths. And but he was holding, you know, aircraft industry holds down to 0.1007 inch. So a human hair is 0.02 thick. And he's holding, I don't know, if you cut that human hair up into 3 or 4 pieces longitudinally, he was holding tolerances like that. And that's when you get into, okay, we got the shop has to be a certain temperature. You can't let it heat up because, you know, you get a little bit of warmth in it. It grows, it gets bigger, and it changes. I mean, it's a nightmare on certain materials. And you just have to really pay attention. Well, anyway, I bought the machine and threw a set of 350 small block heads on it and was putting a set of seats in the thing. And the spindle moves really slow. So, but before you can take the cutter out, the spindle has to completely stop. So it was not stopping fast enough for me, so I just reached over there and cut the machine off, and it was coasting. But I grabbed the spindle to slow it down, and when I did, the cutter grabbed my pinky finger and just kind of rolled it in between the cutter and the radius of the back of the head. And just, you know, with a skill saw, when you cut yourself, it's so fast you don't know you're doing it. But I saw it coming and got my finger hung in the thing. And it just, I mean, it just mashed it like a grape, and I could not get it out. And couldn't reach my phone, was hollering for Daddy, hollering for Anna, and nobody could hear me, and had my hand, my pinky hung in the thing. And I sat there for a couple of minutes trying to figure out what I was going to do, couldn't get it out. And I had to reach up and put the machine in reverse to get my finger out of it. And I reach over with my right hand and put my hand on the switch, and I just breathe like, okay, come on, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it, and then I chicken out. And then I tried again. So finally the pain got so bad, I just did it. I just reached up and hit reverse, and of course it spit it right out. But, you know, you got to be careful with that stuff. You're always getting cut, or things move so fast, and if you don't pay attention, you know, you really get hurt, you know. So I got a little routine before I get on the lathe or the mill, you know: no long sleeves, no shirt tails hanging out, no rings, no watches. And I'm pretty adamant about that, because if I get hurt down there, it's, you know, it'll be hours before anybody finds me. So I, you know, have to really pay attention. And as far as the wood lathe goes, Gary, I think it's more dangerous than a metal lathe. I mean, that's my opinion. But it's just an awful lot of material, and things move so fast. But, you know, metal don't give. So, Larry, if you're still in there, or Gary One, pick it up.
Before JBQ, I'll chime in here. All these discussions about machine shopping and stuff like that, I've never had one. I've watched a bunch of it. Oh, yes, I have worked on a machine lathe, the watchmaker's machine lathe. So, that's so tiny, you could carry it easily with one hand. And the difficulty there is, of course, viewing your work piece and your tool under magnification. That's where the difficulty lies there. Now, if you have a lathe like you're talking about, it's a whole nother country, as they say. Oh, my. So, one thing that occurred to me, the way you're feeling right now, Gary will understand this as an homage to Ray. Ray would say his tired was showing. KK4JBQ.
Good. That is good. That's good. Gary, you do sound tired, but I know you've been on your feet all day. But it's a good thing what you're doing. I just, you know, just want to let you know that's a good thing.
Well, I'm not doing anything except just standing around and talking to the folks, and the folks that are coming over and buying the stuff, they're the ones that's doing it. You know, that they're doing the good part. But I'm having a lot of fun. I enjoy that sort of stuff, you know. Sitting out and talking to folks and playing with radios and that sort of stuff. But, Larry, I don't know if you said something about a watch, a jeweler's watch lathe or something of that nature. I don't know if I could handle that. My little short, fat fingers, I probably couldn't handle that because it's too small.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised that if you put up your, well, I don't know how the hands would match, but you put up your hand and I put up my hand, I bet you have a bigger one than mine. And it comes in handy. Not when you play piano. I've tried that and I failed miserable. But working with watches, small parts, things like that under magnification, it helps to have short, stubby fingers.
Let me make sure I got it. So I'm assuming that there's a carriage on there, but you probably do a lot of pushing the tooling in with your hands so you can kind of see and feel at the same time. But with some of this stuff I got down here, you could see with your eyes what is happening, and I have learned to listen to the machine and how it sounds. And that's, I know that sounds crazy, but tooling usually has a feed rate and a speed rate that you cut at that's ideal, and I just never got that to work out right. But I can listen to the machine and see what's happening and get really good results. I guess if you do it enough, you kind of learn to do that. But there's no feel to it. When you engage the carriage, it's going to move. It's going to go. And, Gary, you were talking about Chris. So he does the CNC stuff. And because of his situation, that's really helpful to him, because he can design the part on the computer, put it on a thumb drive, and take it over there and stick it in the machine. And the machine does most of the, you know, the controlling. But you are right in that from time to time he'll get the decimal point mixed up, or he'll get the speed wrong or the feed rate wrong. And, you know, I was up there one day and he had purchased an end mill to do a job, and it was just a simple cut. And, I mean, less than half a second. That was $85 gone, just like that. And, you know, I tell him, so we got a running joke between the two of us. You know, we're cousins. And, he does CNC, and I do all of the manual stuff here at my house. So I tell him he's moved to the dark side, and he's always giving me a hard time about, you know, the manual stuff, because he can, once he gets it programmed, he can cut 1,000 of them in a minute, whereas it'll take me 1,000 days to make one part. But, you know, I don't do production stuff like he does, and that's more suited for what he does, I guess, because he's a manufacturer, or licensed as a manufacturer. So I don't do that kind of stuff. I do, you know, engine work, and some of the type of engines that I get down here are, I don't know how to say it, legacy or antique. And when you take some of those antique engines to a machine shop that does that kind of stuff, they'll usually just tell you, no, we're not going to do it, because if they make a mistake, there's no replacing it. You can't go to LKQ Junkyard and get another one. So, you know, I guess that forces me to be a little bit diligent about the way I do things, and just have to take my time and no distractions. the first engine I built years ago, I bought a boring bar that bolts to the top of the block to bore the cylinders out. And it was a junk block I had down at the, just to practice and learn. And I got halfway through the first cylinder, and it come loose. I mean, the anchor mechanism came loose, and that whole boring bar assembly just, I mean, it just destroyed the block and fell in the floor and destroyed a handle on it, and I mean, it did a lot of damage in less than 5 seconds. So that's when I realized what I was, you know, up against, and I closed the doors, locked the doors, put the phone outside, and when I get through that portion of the machining, then I'll have to take a break because I'm exhausted because I've had to focus so much on it to keep from damaging something. And so far, so good. After that learning lesson, and luckily it was with my block, with that lesson, I learned that was a pretty important lesson that, hey, you can really mess something up. And I just, you know, I have to be real careful that way.
Christy Hard Knocks.
Just so you know, when you went in the shop, so most of the manual stuff in there, there are times when the CNC just won't do it, and I run most of the manual stuff up there. He runs it too, but I do a lot of manual stuff up there to help him out when he needs some manual work done. But that's just a quick way to remove a lot of material, so when he moves it over to the CNC, it's not so rough on tooling, because that thing moves so fast that, I mean, it amazes me how that works, but I have no desire to learn that. It's just, it's too much. I'll stick to the sawmill and my manual stuff, and, but he's an interesting person, and, he's the Whitmire side of the family, and I really enjoy being around him. I mean, he's my cousin, you know. But, I mean, you understand where I'm coming from.
I understand that completely, and it's like I told him and told you, too. I said, there's some Whitmires on Joy's side of the family. It's not blood. It's marriage, through marriage. But I said, you know, we might even meet Brad's kin down the road somewhere if we dig far enough. He laughed, and you laughed as well, but I thought that was pretty interesting. I'll let some of these other fellows jump in here. You learn those lessons the hard way, and those seem to stick with you a whole lot longer than some of the ones that other lessons that you learn. It may take you 2 or 3 times, but you mess up something big time one time, then you say, I ain't going to do that again. So we call that the University of Hard Knocks, and that's been around a long time.
Before you go, Gary, you and Larry, I want y'all to be a witness to this. He's done told us how expensive titanium is. Well, when I die, I'm going to be cremated. But I'm going to amend my will. I'm going to give him these 4 titanium rods, 6 titanium plates, and 8 titanium screws in my neck.
Well, to be cremated, there ain't going to be nothing left of that.
Before they cremate you, if you got any kind of pins in your knees or your ankle, they take them out. They don't put them in the crematory. Yeah, they take all that out of you. They don't put no metal in that crematory. They take all the metal out of your body.
I got a question for you, and this is a serious question. So if I pass away first, would you be interested in being a pallbearer for me?
Probably would. What you gonna do with your radio equipment? Oh, never mind, because Anna get all of this. She's a ham too now. But you're talking about getting your finger hung in that machine. Before my ex-wife and I divorced, I thought the world of my father-in-law and mother-in-law. My father-in-law had an old 64 Chevrolet, and the alternator belt was squealing on it. And my know-it-all stepson, he wasn't but about 14. He said, I went out there and was going to tighten it up for my father-in-law. And my stepson come out there and said, I don't need you. I can do this. He cranked the car up, went and got his toolbox out of the truck, loosened the alternator up, and reached up there to pull back on it, and he stuck his finger in the between the pulley and the belt, and it completely cycled his finger through the alternator. I stood there and laughed, and they was all hollering and screaming, wanting to take him to the emergency room. It didn't break his finger, it didn't even bleed, but it was loose enough to where it cycled his finger all the way around the pulley.
I was asking you that was, so I got a pretty long driveway. It's probably eighth of a mile long. Maybe a little longer. So I'm gonna get you to be a pallbearer, and I'm gonna put my casket at the end of the driveway because I'm gonna be buried out here. And I'm gonna call Metromont Concrete, and I'm gonna have that casket filled full of concrete. And that way you can help carry that casket out to where I'm gonna be buried out here at the curve. Is that a deal?
About that, I had a good friend out of Fernandum about 8 months ago, and he wanted to be buried on this property. If you buried on your own property, you cannot be embalmed, and you have to be buried in a wooden casket. Something that'll rot. And his son, Billy's, his son was a darn good carpenter, but his son built his daddy a casket out of pallets, and they buried him up there right next to his bedroom window. I couldn't believe somebody wanted to be buried that way, but Ricky did. But yeah, I'll be your pallbearer if you'll get that doggone Bobcat fix where I can lift it up.
Oh, wait, no. All right, Larry, go ahead, bud.
K4JBQ, I wonder how to follow that up. Okay, we'll go back to talking about lathes. I apprenticed with a master jeweler that was a marvelous watchmaker. And a couple things that he did right in front of me, I was just startled by. We took in a watch. This was in Richmond, Virginia, so there's a lot of rich people around Richmond. Must be. We took in a watch that was valued. Part of the work was to appraise the watch. It was appraised at $22,000. It was a $20 gold piece. Cut in half, sliced through the middle, so you had the reverse and the obverse side of the coin, and it was milled out. The gold was milled out for the gears, springs, and all the pieces inside the watch. And then those gears, the pinions were made of tool steel, but those gears were made of 22 karat gold. And we took the watch in for appraisal and also to repair. And one of the gears had stripped a couple of teeth. So this guy was, he was named, well, we called him Mac. His last name was McDonald. He made the gear. And what reminded me of this was what was Chad was saying about the sound of the tooling when the machine's in operation. Well, he did this work on his small jeweler's lathe, and he would listen to the sound, but he said, you want to get your nose in there and smell it. So he could tell by the smell of the cutter part and the work part, the work would send off an odor, and he would get his speed right and his cut rate right by just smelling it. Have you ever heard of anything like that? KK4JBQ.
Okay, so let me tell you what I know about that, and I know anybody out there listening is thinking, oh, my word, what's Larry talking about? But there is a company that makes a product called TPM Tapmatic, and it is cutting oil for threads. So it has a very distinctive odor to it. It's not a bad odor, it's just very distinctive. And when the tap is running in high speed in the material, that product will heat up and it releases that odor. So, and I've been using it for years, and it's a really good product and it does a really good job. But one year they came out with an alternate version in it that had a peppermint smell to it. Evidently, people had complained about the odor or the smell or whatnot, so they made a new version of it. It was the same oil, the cutting oil, it just had a peppermint smell to it. And it did not last probably a year on the market because I'm convinced that it changed the way the machinist knew how to run the machinery, because when you don't have sensory inputs, it's just like a radio. So all I can hear is your voice. I cannot see your facial movements, I can't see your body language, I can't see how you stand or anything. Well, all of those are inputs that if we're face-to-face and talking, that gives me visual cues of, okay, you know, this is indicators of how the conversation is going. But with radio, for example, all you get is a voice. You can get some voice inflections, but that's it. And that is easy to misinterpret what someone is trying to say or get across to you. Well, a machine, from my experience, is the same thing. You can't feel what the cutter is doing, but you can hear the machine. Some instances, I can lay my hand on the machine and get a little bit of input, not a whole lot. But when you lose that sensory perception of touch, or you lose a couple of your senses in doing something, other senses get stronger. So when I am focusing on something in a lathe or the milling machine to get down to a tight tolerance, I have to pull on every sensory input I can possibly manage. And I totally get the smell. I get it. Every material has its own odor. It has its own smell. And when you put that smell with how the machine sounds and what the chip looks like, you're able to get a picture of, okay, well, I'm